the parties here, Mr. Baez?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Johansson? Counsel, have you signed in?
I have not signed in.
Right, if you don't mind doing that.
Sure.
Ms. Johansson, have you also signed?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm going to have you sign in a second. Mr. Eller, I'm going to ask if you don't mind showing Ms. Johansson where she would need to sign. I'm not sure if she'd be familiar. I'm going to have my clerk help you just. Counsel, give us just 1 minute to have her sign in.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Counsel, how much time would you like to reserve in reference to the rebuttal?
2 minutes.
Again, whenever you're ready.
All right. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Just want to take an opportunity to thank you all for hearing our case today. My name is Jesse Baez, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Matthew Ford. And just to give a brief recital of the facts, this is an appeal of a child support modification motion that was filed by Mr. Ford. It was denied by the trial court, and essentially what the basis of the court's decision was that there was no material change in circumstances. And Judge, I'll just point the court's attention to assignment of error, one of my brief. One of the main reasons here is that we are here is that the trial court didn't conduct a full evaluation whether or not a material change of circumstances has occurred. And I'll refer your honors to page 59 in the appendix. Now, the prior child support order was embodied in a final decree.
Let me ask you a question about this.
Yes, sir.
The question, I understand your argument is that to know whether circumstances have changed from 2013 is we have to know what the circumstances were in 2013, and so it was probably a good road to go down. But you've heard the questions in the last case about proffers. The only question that's asked about 2013 and the only answer is that she was in fact employed at Restoration Hardware making some amount of money that is not known to the record. Was there an obligation on you at that point to proffer the additional questions you wanted to ask and what you expected the answers to be? Because how can we tell from the record whether there has or has not been a change of circumstances when even you concede that type of information is absolutely necessary to make that determination, and you didn't provide it to us in any way that we can see?
Well, Judge, to answer your question, I think I absolutely try to go down that road in the trial court. If you look at my sequence of questions, I was asking about her employment situation in 2013. Opposing counsel objected, and it was sustained, and I was arguing.
And when that happens, there's an obligation on the party whose evidence has been excluded to proffer what that evidence would have been. Did you do that?
Sir, I would contend that I did. I stated to
where?
On page 59, I argue the fact that the final decree was based on circumstances in 2013, but unfortunately, I was cut short and told to move on, and not to be rude to the trial court, I just moved on with my questioning.
I know it is difficult in the face of that to say I'd like to proffer for the record, but don't our cases say that's incumbent upon you?
I would say that I met my burden under those cases, sir, in trying to point out to the court that the order was based on financial circumstances in 2013, and I was simply cut off, and I noted my objection to the court's statement.
I guess to follow up on Judge Russell's question, what is it we're supposed to take from your objection? What testimony are we supposed to assume without viewing it in the record?
Well, Judge, just the fact that I wasn't allowed to go back to that point in time in 2013, I would contend to the court, is reversible error in and of itself. The court should have examined what the financial circumstances of both parties were at that point in time, but sustained an objection by opposing counsel, and that inquiry was never conducted.
But how are we supposed to know whether the answer that would have been given would have been relevant, whether it would have been harmless? How are we supposed to do that analysis without having the actual proffered statement? I think that's a follow-up on what Judge Russell was asking. Not whether you were doing all that you could, but whether we actually had the information before us in which we can make the decision or determination.
Well, unfortunately, Judge, we don't have all the information. I mean, the only thing we can go based off of is the final decree contained in my brief, and we don't know for a fact what the party's financial circumstances were. But it was a reversible error for the court not to even entertain going.
Well, if the answer to the question, how much were you making per year at Restoration Hardware, was $50,000 a year.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we have no way of knowing whether that's right or not, given the rest of what you put in. I assume that would be high, but if it was $50,000 a year, was there a material change in circumstance?
Well, Judge, I would argue that if we were allowed to go down that road, there was, in fact, a material change of circumstances.
Assuming a salary of $50,000 a year from Restoration Hardware.
Yes, sir.
Was there a material change in circumstances that would merit a reduction in the amount, given that she's making less than $50,000 a year now?
I cannot say that with an absolute certainty because we weren't able to go down that road as far as how much she was making at that point.
Well, right. If you can't say it, how can we say it?
Well, Judge, I would just contend that the fact that we weren't even allowed to evaluate the finances at that point in time was plainly wrong, with all due respect to the trial court.
But don't we have to know the basis for the initial child support award? This is not spousal support.
Correct.
We're looking at child support, which is totally driven by the guidelines.
Correct, sir.
Don't we have to know what the court found in terms of income at that time, the initial support was awarded per the worksheet, not per the testimony of the witness? And don't we need to know whether or not the trial court deviated from the presumptive amount, the guidelines?
And you're absolutely right. The final decree in ordinary circumstances would normally have a deviation or a guideline sheet attached to it. I wasn't the attorney for the actual divorce and did not contain this information, which is why it was all the more pertinent to be allowed to go down that road.
It's irrelevant what the wife testifies to in terms of what her earnings were at the time the decree was entered, or at the prior to the time the decree was entered, for that matter. What's relevant is what the trial court found her earnings to be. And unless we know what the trial court found her earnings to be, we can't determine whether there's been an increase or decrease.
Well, I think upon questioning of a witness, we could certainly see what the circumstances of the parties were at that time.
Well, and I understand you may not be able to answer it because you weren't there. From my read of the record, it appears that the amount that ended up being ordered as child support in the final decree was not a guideline amount, deviated from the guidelines, and of course the court, contrary to its statutory obligation, doesn't explain how and why.
Correct, sir.
And so if somebody were appealing that decree and that hadn't become a final non-appealable order, that would be a really interesting argument. But if that's the circumstance we have now, none of that matters, correct? Other than we know that the parties didn't rely on the guidelines to come up with a number, the fact that the trial court didn't meet its statutory obligation is irrelevant to our review here.
Correct, sir. As you're well aware, the final decree went well beyond being able to appeal it, so I can only take and argue what I have in front of me.
But if we don't have the guideline worksheet, how do we know that the trial court didn't put down a reason on that worksheet why the amount was greater than what was calculated?
Well, again, Judge, I can't really speak to what the parties all consented to at the time of the final decree. I was not the attorney of record. I can only submit to the court that it would have been very relevant to explore what the financial circumstances were of both parties at the time of that August 13th hearing.
The court has to, because the parties can't consent to child support. The trial court has to find that whatever amount they agreed to is in the best interest of the child, and therefore deviation from the guidelines is appropriate. It's the child's needs that we're concerned with.
Correct, but none of that was contained in the final decree itself, so I can't really...
That's my point.
I can't really speak to it, unfortunately.
Well, it is your understanding that the amount that was eventually ordered was less than the guidelines would have suggested. Is that correct?
I believe it was more than what the guidelines would have suggested.
Okay.
From my understanding, speaking with my client and reviewing the record. But I will say that even if we take as the benchmark the date of entry of the final decree itself, there's been a material change in circumstances. And I'll refer your honors to the evidence introduced as far as tax returns and mother's profit and loss statements. We went from 2014 to mom making gross sales, net sales of $3,000 to the first part of 2016 alone.
Why would gross sales be irrelevant?
Well, that would be her income that she's bringing in from the business.
No, a gross sale is not. A gross sale is the profit and loss of the business. The last profit and income statement says that right then, as of, I think, May, the business was, I think, $26,000 to the good for that calendar year. But it doesn't tell us, does the business have expenses in the out portion of that year? It doesn't tell us if that money is going to be reinvested in the business. It doesn't tell us it's going to be her income. So how do we get there based on a profit and loss statement in May where there's no testimony that she's going to take any of that as income or can take any of it as income?
Well, to speak to Your Honor's point, at the 2016 profit and loss statements, I would say that the profit and loss statement itself accounts for all expenditures that she's making on behalf of the business.
All expenditures that have gone out at that time.
Correct.
But we tend to do income on an annualized basis. How do we know that in 2 months or 3 months she doesn't have the business doesn't have a bigger bill due? No one asks that question. Is this profit your income? And it's not her money, it's the business's money at that point, isn't it? Isn't that the point of the profit and loss statement?
Correct. Again, I can't testify how the rest of the year went. We only have that snapshot of that point in time. But also, if you look at Mom's tax records that were also introduced, it shows a marked increase from the time of the entry of the final order in 2014 to 2015 tax year. I'll also point Your Honor's attention to Mr. Ford's tax records. I mean, just looking at the tax records from 2014 and 2015, his business takes a fairly big hit. I don't have the exact...
But counsel, his income does not. The income that's actually imputed to him does not go down. In fact, it goes up. The business may change in terms of the amount that's being taken in, but not his income. Isn't that fair to say?
I would disagree, Your Honor. The financial health of his business obviously has a direct proportion on his own ability to pay child support. If you review the record, I mean, this had an impact on his ability to just pay his own health insurance. So the health of the business...
If the trial court credits her testimony that he does a lot of stuff off books, and so there's a lot of income that's not showing up in the tax documents, assuming the trial court credited that statement, then as the party with the burden of proof, don't you almost have to lose on whether his income went down?
I would disagree with that statement, sir. I would say that the trial court has to take into account whatever it has in front of it.
But one of the things it has in front of it is her testimony that he goes off books, correct?
Correct, but besides her testimony, there was no other evidence that he was receiving cash and putting it in his pocket or receiving it.
But it was evident. There was evidence that that was a past practice of his.
There was some evidence that there was a past practice in it, but we also have to take into consideration Mom hasn't been involved with the business for 2, 3, 4 years at this point. So we can't extrapolate that and say Dad's now taking money, not claiming it to the IRS, and putting it directly in his pocket. And I'll turn to the last assignment of error in my brief. And Judge, just based on case law, the court is not required to find a material change. The order was entered in April 11, 2014. As Your Honors are well aware, there was new child support guidelines.
Well, and this is where not having the old child support guidelines anywhere in our record is problematic, because we have characterized legislative changes in child support guidelines three ways. One, that they provide the material change in circumstances. Two, that they are, in fact, in and of themselves, a material change in circumstance, or could be. Or that's not the right way to characterize them, but they are...
Exception.
As long as they are... It's an exception so long as it's a substantial change. We would have to know what the guidelines would have been in 2013, and then what they would have been using 2013 numbers with the new child support guidelines to know whether the change was, whether it was a material change or whether it was a substantial change, wouldn't we? And we don't have any of that.
That's correct. But Judge, I'd argue to the court that my client doesn't lose his right to ask for a modification of child support simply because the prior order was defective in extrapolating the guidelines and saying whether there's a deviation.
It's your burden to show that the change is, whether it's substantial or whether it's a material change, it's your burden, is it not?
Correct. So what the trial court should have done is take an inquiry of what the party's finances were at that time, what are the party's finances now, and run the guidelines.
And I know you probably want to sit down on one more question in this line.
Yes, sir.
In this line. It was represented by opposing counsel at the time
that the change to the guidelines would have increased the non-custodial parents' payments. Do you agree with that characterization?
I don't believe so, sir. I handed up a worksheet at the trial court level. It showed a...
If we used the same numbers that we had used back initially, if apples to apples, the legislative change would have increased what a parent paid.
And again, I can't speak for certainty because, as you pointed out a few minutes earlier, that restoration hardware, what were we making back then? I don't know. It's not contained in the final decree, but at a minimum, the trial court should have allowed an inquiry to figure out what was going on at that time, what's going on at this time. Does this does it vary from the guidelines significantly?
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Add 30 seconds back on board because I realize you've had some questions.
I would just ask the court to remand and reverse back to the trial court. Thank you.
Mr. Hansel.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm clearly not a lawyer, and I've never stood before appeals court, so I apologize in advance. From a legal standpoint, I don't know what I'm doing, so I will just tell you what I do know. We are here because my ex-husband, Mr. Ford, is arguing that the circuit court erred in its findings when the judge handed down his decision to uphold our financial agreement. I would like to tell you how we came to that agreement, since there seems to be some confusion. In 2013, after considering all facts in this case, a circuit court judge ordered $4,260 per month to be paid by Mr. Ford in combined support. Mr. Ford asked me to agree to a lesser amount, child support only, of $3,250. He promised me that this agreement would keep us out of court. I agreed, and in April of 2014, we signed our divorce decree. This has always been about the kids. The support would allow me to care for them the way they deserve to be cared for. I have no help or family in Richmond. My closest relative is 2 hours away and travels often for work. I need support financially from Mr. Ford. But this isn't about why I need the support. I've already been through a trial for that and was awarded more. The point is, we agreed to $3,250. We did not use the guidelines. We did not go by the court order. We agreed to a number that was meant to reduce Mr. Ford's obligation and keep our family out of this vicious legal cycle. Instead, merely 9 months later, Mr. Ford filed to reduce the support, thus beginning this legal battle that continues before you today. By his own admission to me in mediation, court-ordered mediation by Judge Campbell, he and his previous lawyer engineered the agreement between us to try to undermine the court system with the goal of not having to pay child support. He had always planned to file for this reduction, even when making this agreement and assuring me our legal battle was over. He is currently a year behind in child support payments. This isn't about not being able to afford his child support payments. This year, he and his wife bought and renovated a home. This is about lack of accountability, lack of responsibility, and this is about a complete disregard for the decisions of this court. One of the most difficult factors of this case for me to process is that Mr. Ford is asking to be excused from a large portion of child support during a time when he did not have any contact with the boys at all because of his poor life decisions. I was the one who supported them physically, emotionally, and as best as I could financially, though the support issues that existed during that time caused financial hardship. If this support case is reconsidered and Mr. Ford wins, I could potentially owe him tens of thousands of dollars in back support. Tens of thousands of dollars owed by a single mom who cared for her children through some of the hardest times that were caused by Mr. Ford's bad judgment. Money that would be owed from the person who carried the full weight of responsibility to the person who hindered her capabilities at every opportunity. This, to me, would be unfair and unjust. There hasn't been any accountability to this point, and this is just another effort by Mr. Ford to not be held accountable. Nothing has changed that would warrant a change in support. Mr. Ford and I still do the same work for our businesses. My children attend the same schools, and I still cover their health care expenses. The other facts in this case speak for themselves. The circuit court knows this case well and understands it well. The simple fact is that Mr. Ford has attempted to undermine the legal process and should not be allowed to do so. One other thing I would like to note in terms of what Mr. Baez has already said is that it is correct that Mr. Ford's tax returns had changed, and as you noted, his return did go up. And the judge did say in this case that the way that our businesses are structured, we own our own businesses. There will be fluctuations year to year. At what point do we say that those fluctuations warrant a change in support, especially knowing his history of hiding income, and especially because when we divorced, he told me he would bankrupt his business before he gave me a dime. This does seem to be like it was very premeditated from the beginning, that he never intended on paying support, and that he always wanted to make sure that this was, that the outcome was that he would not have to pay it. The other thing I would like to point out is that the only case that was offered at the trial by Mr. Baez as a case to compare to was a case that did go off the guidelines, but that was determined by the guidelines. Our case was not determined by the guidelines. It was determined by an agreement between us. And so I don't feel that that was relevant. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Hold on for a second. I'm going to add 30 seconds back to your time.
Yes, ma'am. Very briefly, Judge, the case I cited in the trial court level was Head versus Head, which is based on Slanka versus Penline. This case, there was actually a property settlement agreement, an agreement between the parties. So Head versus Head and both Slanka would be dispositive in this case. And Judge, as far as the financial circumstances of the party, since 2014, the only way, based on the evidence that's been presented to the trial court, that mom's finances have gone is up. And Judge, under Featherstone versus Brooks, both parties have an obligation to support the child, and we need to examine the finances and obligations of both sides.
But in Slanka, the party seeking the reduction based on the change in the guidelines was able to demonstrate that I'm paying this much a month now, but because the guidelines now take into account joint custody, that we reduced it, I think, $54 from either $800 or $8,000. We have nothing in the record here demonstrating any move, let alone a substantial move, correct? I mean, what would I look at?
Well, Judge, again, the only thing that we can look at is the testimony of the parties and the tax returns. And again, a lot of it goes back to the final decree and the deficiencies and not having the guidelines and not having the deviations. But, Judge, I would just say that if we extrapolate this, parties always have a right to seek a modification from the court as long as they can prove the requirements in Yohei versus Ryan, or they can show an exception to the material change in circumstances. If we take the defect in the prior order and solidify it, my client will never have a right to even ask the court for a modification because of a prior defect in the final decree. So, Judge, thank you for hearing the argument today.
All right, thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.